Gospel according to John, the 6th chapter. And Jesus said, "Those who eat my flesh and drink my blood abide in me, and I in them. Just as the living Father sent me, and I live because of the Father, so whoever eats with me will live because of me. This is the bread that came down from heaven, not like that which your ancestors ate and they died, but the one who eats this bread will live forever." He said these things while he was teaching in the synagogue at Capernaum. When many of his disciples heard it, they said, "This teaching is difficult. Who can accept it?" But Jesus, being aware of his disciples were complaining, said to them, "Does this offend you? Then what if you were to see the Son of Man ascending to where he was before? It is the Spirit that gives life. The flesh is useless. The words that I have spoken to you are spirits and life. But among you there are some who do not believe." For Jesus knew from the first who were the ones that did not believe, and who was the one that would betray him. And he said, "For this reason I have told you that no one can come to me unless it is granted by the Father." Because of this, many of his disciples turned back and no longer went about with him. So Jesus asked the 12, "Do you also wish to go away?" And Simon Peter answered him, "Lord, to whom can we go? You have the words of eternal life. We have come to believe and know that you are the Holy One of God." This is the gospel of the Lord. I would like you to turn to your neighbor and share the strangest thing you have ever eaten. Okay, we can't spend the whole service on that. You've got a really good story. You can share it at coffee hour. Our deepest value in campus ministry is around hospitality. So my personal passion for cooking and the students' deep hunger are a perfect match. As one student said years ago, "She loves to cook, we love to eat. It's perfect," right? Most people that know me would say, "I'm a pretty adventurous eater," by most definitions of the word. But in my travels, occasionally I will encounter something that kind of turns my stomach. Maybe some of you have stories like that too. Our students still tell trip stories of our 2010 trip to Guatemala. Those, whenever I see an alum, they'll say, "Do you remember that time we ate the foot fruit?" And I said, "Oh, yes, yes." There was a small girl that came up to us and offered us these seed pods that both smelled and tasted distinctly like chalky feet. I realize that it's a privilege, the place where I was born into, that I wasn't exposed to many organ meats that my family had the ability to provide in different ways. So I know that's why I still have a hard time, though, with brain and kidneys and blood sausages, but also Provel cheese, you know, because it is. Think about these things as you hear the disciples' fear and terror. Just before this, in verse 52, they say, "How can this man give us his flesh to eat?" Did they hear it as cannibalism? Did they think he literally wanted them to eat his flesh? Because they were immersed in a sacrifice culture, right? They had plenty of familiarity with stories not only of the Hebrew scriptures, but also of Greek and Roman culture all around them that demanded sacrifices to their gods. Some cannibalistic societies even eat the flesh and drink the blood of the fallen warriors in hopes that they would take on their life force of courage in this world. And while we think this may be ancient history, these fears, this terror, I actually found a modern article about Catholicism and cannibalism. That's the title. It turns out that there's still plenty of people with genuine fear that Jesus' real presence in the bread and wine is still something illicit, unsure. As Lutherans, we call this paradox. We live in this deep tension, right? In understanding how something can be both earthly bread and wine and very much divine host and blood. This passage, of course, reminds us that the Gospel of John does have an over-the-top style in his use of metaphor. Our theologian Gail Ramshaw says it like this: the natural fact celebrated John's graphic vocabulary is that all of us live off the life of others, from our mother's milk to the flesh of dead animals. So for John, the bread and the wine are the very life of the Christ, whose death gives us life. That is the phrase to transcend time and place. Because oftentimes it seems the highest value in America still seems to be becoming a self-made person, from rags to riches, pulling yourself up by those bootstraps, right? Transgressing to higher planes. I actually call it the loudest myth in our land, that we alone write our own destiny, all by ourselves. At the very core of the Christian ethos is the understanding of an interconnectedness of humanity, of the world, that none of us can exist on our own. So while our modern sacrificial language is no longer so much about slaughtering of animals or firstborn children, I do think that each of us probably were raised in some kind of story by our parents or grandparents about what they gave up, right, to give us a better life. These stories humble and remind us of our roots, those that connect us to the lifeblood that is beyond the years we inhabit in this earth. I was raised on the story of how my grandfather, from a family of Dutch immigrants during the Depression, had to stop school at eighth grade and go work in a steel mill to help provide just basic food and shelter for his family. That was the sacrifice that Papa gave. These stories speak to how our family abides in us and we in them, and that love is deep and rare. For many of us, it is also rooted in our biblical understanding of sacrifice, of generosity, and really hope beyond understanding. We need this kind of abundant love in our most liminal spaces, the thin places where we live on both sides of a boundary or a threshold, like when a loved one, a beloved friend, dies before their time, when we lose a job, a relationship, our home, when we are uprooted from safety, from our family, from community. So much of young adulthood is about looking for your people, your tribe, your squad, as the students often say. If you've been married with kids for a long time, maybe you've forgotten what that feels like, to feel so untethered, disconnected. Maybe you lust after that kind of freedom, that lack of responsibility, but being untethered is a scary place to live so light on the land. At its best, the family unit should personify safety, support, and love, right? It is necessary, but really challenging, that evolution into adulthood, to leave that safety, that unit, and develop new relationships that will abide with you in your deepest moments of challenge and change. Because we can likely all relate to the disciples' questions and the fear and the frustration that is below all that they're saying. God, I do not understand what is happening right now. Have we not all uttered that statement at some point in our lives, if not again and again? And we know, just like the disciples did, that plenty of people at that moment, at that crux, plenty of people stop walking in the way of Jesus because they don't have support or answers or community to wrestle. To this I respond, is your faith complex enough and your communities diverse enough to handle a variety of belief and unbelief, of understanding and of questions? Is it strong enough? Years ago, I will never forget listening to the second presiding bishop of our denomination, H. George Anderson, preach about losing his faith when his wife died. He talked about how it rocked his very core, and he seemed to be in this dark spiral that he couldn't get out of. He said, but in those days, I would still go to a church, probably a different one every week, so I didn't get too many questions. But I would slide 5 minutes late into the back pew. And as the liturgy and the music and the word washed over me, I looked at the family of God, and the only words I could say were thank you for holding the faith for me when I have none. This is the best of who we are, pilgrims on a journey, helping to carry the faith with one another. In my own moments of deepest doubt, one thing that has always been true is that I know that my home is always in a sacramental church, because this table and the people who gather around it and the bread and the wine that come into me and become a part of me always can bring me back to God. Tonight, for the first time in this school year, our campus ministry community will meet next door in our house, and after we share a regular dinner, we will take a piece of the bread that we saved from that first meal, take it upstairs to our upper room, and then we will break bread again. If you've ever worshiped with us, you know it's not a fast process because we share communion in the round. Certainly not the most efficient or fancy way to do it, but the reason why we do that and stumble through the clumsiness and the crumbs is to remember that this body is given for you, not from the pastor to the student, but from each one of us. That is our story together. And even when we don't believe the words or understand the words, they still hold true. And so that's where ritual supports us and strengthens us and becomes this holy gift that again and again, God's love is abundant as it washes over us and does not need our belief to be full. We need reminders in our stories, in our society, in our world, that we have a radical God who pushed boundaries in every way and calls us to live lives of faith far beyond that which is comfortable, that which is for our own gain, that which is safe. From the very beginning, these stories of Jesus and the earliest disciples remind us that this way, this walk, has always been challenging. It has always been countercultural. It has always left many behind. But I imagine most of you are sitting in the pews today because of the other stories that have kept you in this family of faith. You have seen and tasted and felt support and compassion and the hunger for justice in ways that still is evidence of Christ in this world 2,000 years later. We need your partnership here at Bethel to continue to share this story of hope and justice and radical welcome with young adults in the St. Louis area. We need your help to welcome students that dare to enter your doors, the immigrants and pilgrims among us. And we need your support of Lutheran Campus Ministry. Your donations of tithes and of meals is a wonderful way to help sustain that work that we are doing with our young adults in this most transitional time in their lives. We are called out from this place as the bread to continue to feed and nourish those all around us. And this is not just our story, though this is our version of the story. A couple weeks ago, I had the honor of representing WashU with a few others at the Interfaith Youth Corps Interfaith Leadership Institute in Chicago, and we talked a lot about if we could combine the social capital of all of our religious traditions, we could end hunger, poverty, disease. There are millions of us that care about these things. Though we may be motivated from different places, this, in fact, is a goal that is within our reach. I pray that after you are fed by this table, that you may be sustained and emboldened to go out into this world and be the love that is desperately needed in a place of dissonance and anger. That is not the end of our story. God abides in us and us in God. And in that way, Christ needs us to be the hands and feet in the world. May you be the light of Christ every day. Amen.